The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. We're on Man in Line, open line through until 1 o'clock today. Whatever's on your mind, and your chance to have your say by calling 66 13 68, text 166 177, WhatsApp 166 177, or email studio at manxradio.com. Former Chief Minister Tony Brown was on Man in Line on Friday. If you listen, do you have any thoughts on what he had to say? Obviously, he's come back now as a Castletown commissioner, had many things to say about Castletown in general and politics as well. So if you've got any thoughts on any reflections on what he had to say, by all means, do get in touch. Tomorrow, we're looking at energy efficiency on the Isle of Man. DEFA are in tomorrow. Well, actually, the Minister of DEFA, Claire Barber, MHK, is in, plus Angie Lund, who's from the Energy Efficiency Team, and the Treasury Minister is going to be with them. Alex Allinson, Dr. Allinson, will be in tomorrow talking about that. And next week, a week today, next Tuesday, Manx Executive Director of Nursing and Allied Health Professionals, Sheila Lloyd, will be in to talk about her areas of responsibility. That's next Tuesday and tomorrow. That's what's happening on Man in Line. So what would you do to improve Douglas? Businesses have been encouraged to take advantage of government schemes to expand their offerings as visitor numbers decline in Douglas City Centre. In a post on social media, City Centre management asked users to offer their suggestions as to what might improve footfall in the street, in Strand Street, Castle Street, Duke Street area. Earlier this year, Timbald approved the local economy strategy, which provides financial assistance towards projects in towns, villages and in the capital. So what would you do to improve Douglas City Centre? Thoughts? Text, email, call and WhatsApp, and anything else that's on your mind as well. Let's get to the lines. And Julian's first with us today. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. It looks like we're going to have a good run of weather this next week or two.
I do hope this isn't TT weather come early.
Well, this is always a problem, isn't it? You just this happened before, isn't it?
Yeah, when we end up saying to the Germans, you should have been here 2 weeks ago, it was gorgeous.
Well, I think I've seen quite a few English number plates knocking about in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
So I think
the back of the grandstand's filling up as well.
I think they're probably enjoying the freedom they've got before those speed limits come in around the course. Some time ago, if you remember, we had a conversation. I analysed the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's AR6 report, the long form one, which is over 3,000 pages, and there were 27,000 words of uncertainty, like maybe, possibly, likely, modelling. And on the news just recently, I noticed the Chamber of Commerce's recent statement, which they said, our calculations suggest future energy prices could be halved by switching to renewables. So aside from the words like suggest and could, the other one in there is halved. I'm still noticing that the UK wholesale price of natural gas has been at pre-Ukraine war levels now for over a year. It achieved 800 pence per therm at that time in March of 2022. It's now currently around 78p. So why aren't we paying a half now or 17 pence? Why are we still paying 28.5p?
Well, you'd have to ask them that. Why do you think we're still paying that price?
Well, the thing that's given is, oh, well, we had to buy forward at a high price because it was raised prices. But how long can that go on for? You know, it's been It's been a long, long, long time now, and the price hasn't moved as far as I know. It's been 28.5p for an awful long time on our bills. But the gas prices, if you look on any of the major websites, they're all indicating, the Financial Times indicates, it's been bumbling along down at March 2021 prices for months and months and months now. So is there any sign? Because, you know, they say that it's... The Chamber of Commerce is saying it's going to halve our costs. Shouldn't it be a half of what it should be now, then? In which case, it's a half of 17, because we shouldn't be paying 28.5p, as far as I can see.
Now, this is where the consumer in the future will probably get a lot more savvy, because up until now, we've paid electricity prices, we've paid gas prices, but we haven't known the metrics that go into them, you know, as to how they're made up. Now, in the future, surely... the people who provide us energy, and also the regulatory authorities and the government, will expect us to be a lot more, how can I put it, a lot more studious about looking at our bills to know. Because if they're telling us that things are going to be a lot cheaper, then we expect them to be a lot cheaper. And if they're not cheaper, we presumably want to know why, Julian.
Yeah, and, you know, the UK... They've just gone over 12,000 big wind turbines on and offshore, and they're the highest in the 28 countries that are in the International Energy Agency. And people are asking, is the reason that the UK's price is so expensive because of the $11 billion per year in renewable subsidies? Is it the $4.6 billion on carbon taxes? Taxes are levelled against fossil fuel producers. Is it $2.5 billion in grid balancing costs, which don't cost anything, as you know, with these big inertia generating power stations? And they're also talking about $112 billion to put the transmission network in, because they're effectively putting the power stations up in the Shetlands and bringing it 800 miles south, which seems pretty crazy. I mean, you know, when you think about, you know, the power stations around London, they haven't got to go very far, like the Isle of Man. I mean, Poolrose is right in the middle of the largest conurbation on the island. And that's another thing, you know. Spain's power outage the other week, the thing that's been blamed by multiple people, professors of engineering and all sorts, is on the high percentage of renewables. It just occurs to me, with the Chamber of Commerce's calculations, a few of the calculations will be, the MUA mentioned that the 21 megawatts that will be output when the turbines are running at full pelt will be 84% of the 25 megawatts that we use on our minimum, because it varies throughout the year depending winter, summer. So all of a sudden, the Isle of Man's going to be running on 84% renewables. Even Spain hasn't got that kind of expense. I noticed this morning the Japan Times has an article, and it's titled, "Europe's lack of energy storage capacity will require trillions to balance the grid when renewables become high penetration." So we're jumping to 84% at times of everything coming down a dirty intermittent amount of power, aren't we? Yeah, according to the MUA.
Well, I mean, the thing is that most people, and again, like I mentioned with the awareness of where your bills come from and how it's made up, most people didn't know that electricity had to be kept at a certain frequency, otherwise it wobbled around. Now, the people in the industry will, of course, say, of course, everybody knows that. No, they don't. And when everybody heard the fact that the Iberian Peninsula was plunged into darkness purely because... the fail-safes at some power stations cut out because of wobbly electricity, it was news, literally news to most people. Now, we're assuming that that's going to be looked after on the Isle of Man, and it's not going to cost us more. Do you think we're correct in that, Julian?
Well, I can't see how it's possible, because the costings, according to the Japan Times, one of the largest online media sources, is trillions for Europe, trillions. Which is something that's free at the moment from the power stations, because it's inherent in the spinning of these massive rotors that keeps the frequency stable. It just makes me wonder how much of, in these calculations that Ralph Peake talked about, do they talk about the fact that they're arriving at these calculations from a very rough 11 meter per second average wind speed. But if you look at how a wind turbine behaves, it's only actually producing the power that they're telling us it's producing when it's over 29 miles an hour. So that 11 meter per second average, how often is that distribution of the wind at 27 miles an hour and above to get the power that they say that in that snapshot that they talk about? You know, you've got that. And the other side of it is, you don't have the billions in storage on this island to store the electricity that is unneeded. So you've also got to match renewables to our demand. So if it's blowing a hoolie when everyone's at work and not at home cooking, that energy will have to be, in theory, sent across to the UK. But if it's blowing a hoolie, it'll be blowing a hoolie there as well. So will they need our exported electricity anyway? So this whole model is on this. And, you know, I mentioned a while ago that there's this cube rule with wind. For every halving of the wind, you lose eight times the energy. So if you look at a power curve on these turbines that the MUA are talking about, you've only got a drop from, say, 28, 29 miles an hour down to 18. You've lost half the power. So imagine how the wind gusts and changes.
Yeah.
That power curve, and that's why the frequency is all over the place.
Well, so the thing is that, Julian, the people who are involved in this, in bringing sustainable energy and what have you to the Isle of Man, talk extremely confidently about the future, and they say, you know, they say things like, you know, we have to embrace the future, we have to embrace renewables. Basically, we're the good guys, and everything's going to be all right. And believe us, that's what they're saying in essence. Do you believe them?
Well, I just think they're not thinking it through. I mean, for example, if you take, say, for example, the storms that we've had, like Dara and Eowyn and these things, has that been factored into that 11 meter per second? Because you know as well as I do that there's a limit on these turbines and they have to shut down to protect the gearboxes from exploding.
Yeah.
So is this 11 meter per second and all this, you've got that, you've got storms, you've got the Dunkelflaute no wind thing, which doesn't happen all the time, but you have to factor it in. And I think we had one for over 2 weeks a while ago. And then you've got all this balancing issues. And then you're talking about $350 million for an interconnector. I mean, when the Chamber of Commerce are doing these calculations, I mean, they talk about levelized cost of electricity, LCOE. But everyone that you talk to in the industry says it's a very blunt instrument because it's trying to compare what we've got, like Pullrose, with a wind farm. But you need the system level cost. In other words, all the other costs of all the balancing, running the cables, you know, all the extra substations, running the cables all the way from down at Erie Stain up to Douglas, because it's going to have to be distributed from Pullrose, because that's where all the distribution is.
Yeah.
So does the Chamber of Commerce have all the figures that it needs and all the variables and the distribution of the wind? Is it in that bit between 27 and 50 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Because after 50, 55, they cut out anyway.
Okay.
So
right.
What is this? Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, thanks, Andy.
We appreciate it. Thanks for calling today, Julian. You may have heard Ralph Peak talking about this, former MHK Ralph Peak. The Isle of Man Chamber of Commerce says affordable and sustainable energy could help attract new businesses to the Isle of Man. Affordable, sustainable. The energy lead is Ralph Peak, former MHK, and he believes international examples show green energy can drive economic growth and the Isle of Man should follow suit. He said current energy prices could be halved if we embrace renewables. So we're paying at the moment roughly 29p, 28.5p, 29p, 5 and 10 pence, if you like, per kilowatt hour. This is Ralph Peak.
They are high. Unfortunately, the way it's set up at the moment is it's actually connected to the gas price, and that's the way the UK have chosen to do that. Certainly by having renewable energy, our calculations would determine that we'd be half price from what it is now. That is achievable, and that's what we should be getting behind to make it affordable.
How are you calculating that? Because Manx Utilities has told us it can't guarantee electricity prices will come down.
Well, lucky enough, we've got connections with the Danish Technical University, and there's been a whole modelling done on how energy for the island can be produced and what the cost will be. That's the infrastructure as well as the costs, and then you actually end up with a whole community with renewable energy at an affordable price. And we have calculated the cost for all generations, like different generations of energy, even down to a small nuclear reactor renewable energy.
But obviously from purely a financial point of view, if it's going to cost £40 million to install, potentially even more, and Manx Utilities aren't able to guarantee that electricity prices will come down, from a purely financial point of view, would you describe that as a good investment?
Yes, that's the way that the MUA would like to tackle that. It's the first step they're going to do that, so you'd want to support that. They've done their calculations. It's a good start. But it's a bigger picture we want to look at now, and that we work on a strategy on how to get to the 100% renewable energy. And if we can do that, as was laid out in the impact report a few years ago, it's really, you look around the world and it's a public-private partnership. That's what actually gets things done. So, you know, we want to have an open mind of these things. We want to look at them now and see over the next few years how we can actually achieve this 100% renewable energy.
There it is. Ralph Peake, energy lead from the Alaman Chamber of Commerce. And half price electricity. You may remember the only politician who's ever talked about this in any detail is Laurie Hooper, who said, "The way you will sell sustainable energy to the public is if it comes in at between 10 and 20p per kilowatt hour." No other politician ever talks specifics about what it's going to cost us. At the moment, bluntly speaking, and forgive me if I generalise, they all say, "We're the good guys. We know what's going to happen. Trust us." How do you feel about it? Now, let's get to the phones again. Here's Dave with us. Hi, Dave.
Yes. As far as the energy is concerned, and that's not what I came on.
That's okay. It's open line today. You can talk about whatever you want.
Anybody who is interested in it wants to have a look at the very short film about the Shetland Isles. They've destroyed that part, and they've got the most expensive electricity in England. I mean, it's just the most expensive anywhere at the Shetlands. Just have a look at it, and all this is, once we've spent all our money, then it's gone then. Yeah. And everybody will say, well, we're going to learn lessons and we'll spend it on something else. But what I came on for is, last I saw on the news that some paddleboarders were rescued in Laxey,
yeah,
over the weekend. Last week I went out in probably conditions that I shouldn't have done in Guernsey, and six or seven people, including my wife, phoned the lifeboat and the Coast Guard to say I was in trouble. I wasn't actually in trouble. It was very challenging, but I wasn't in trouble. But I'd just like to thank everybody who rang the Coast Guard and the lifeboat. And I'd also like to thank them. They came out. They didn't come out in force. They just walked down the beach and had a chat to me about it. I mean, I am experienced paddleboarder, but we've got a fabulous system over here. And everybody who rang in, brilliant. Thank you very much.
Okay, good. And when are you going out again?
Well, I don't know. Knowing me, it'll probably be when it's not nice today. It's lovely. It'll be good today. But the gods tend to laugh when I have a plan.
Listen, all joking aside, you make sure you stay safe, David. Thanks for calling.
Well, it's something that needs to be talked about over here, because people, you know, you need to have lessons and you need to get proper instruction before you go out. Just, you know, some of these boards, you need to make sure you've got a life jacket on, you've got a leash on, and that you've got the correct inflation.
Okay, all right. Thanks for calling today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Cheers. Now 25 past 12 on Man and Line. Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Oh, let's go to the answer phone.
Hi, Peter. If Michelle Haywood is so intent road safety and pedestrians, would it not be a better idea if they actually taught them in school to walk on the right-hand side of the road, so they were facing the traffic and not on the left with the backs to it and the rear plugs in? Thank you.
Now, if you have a child at school, do they still do the highway code, the Manx Highway Code? Is cycling or anything like that, walking along the pavement? Everybody at one time used to be taught, do you remember, look right, look left, look right again. follow the Green Cross Code and all that stuff. Does that happen now? And particularly, are children, I'm talking about children and young people, are they told never, and I mean never, to wear headphones or earbuds when you're crossing the road? Have you had a chat with your child about this, about road safety? Particularly if you live, and remember, if you live in built-up areas, this is what Michelle Haywood is talking about, the 20 miles per hour. That's what this is all about. Road safety, and particularly in built-up areas and estates.
Hi, Andy. On the subject of local GPs, same problem up in Ramsey. I've just phoned to discuss a prescription I've been given that is having horrible side effects, so I wanted to change the medication. I was told there wasn't a doctor available for a phone call till next month, June. The only option they could give me was to speak to a remote GP in the UK. I wonder where all this 2% levy is going to go. That's what I was thinking. Anyway, thank you. Mary and Ramsey.
Thank you, Mary. Any thoughts about this?
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Looking to make the most of your savings? Cornerstone Bank offer a range of savings options, from fixed terms of 6 months to 3 years, to variable rate notice accounts with notice periods of 95 to 180 days. And choose monthly or annual interest, whatever works for you. For the latest rates and an application form, check out cornerstonebank.co.im. Cornerstone Bank, celebrating 90 years of community, heritage and connection. Here for the journey. All deposits are subject to status, terms and conditions apply. No early withdrawals permitted. Qualifying deposits made with Conister Bank are covered by the Isle of Man Depositors Compensation Scheme as set out in the Depositors Compensation Scheme Regulations 2010.
What a wonderful scene as the whole of the island comes together for the 80th anniversary of VE Day. May the 8th will see a big band concert with guest soloists Paul Costain CP and Nicola O'Connor, plus drumhead service led by the Royal British Legion, live at the Royal Hall Villa Marina from 7 p.m. Secure your tickets now at the Villa Box Office. VE Day 2025, a shared moment of celebration. This advert is kindly sponsored by Athol Health.
Radio Caroline North is back on the air this weekend, giving you a chance to win one of three Prunus Retro AM, FM and shortwave radios with Bluetooth. It's a fabulous prize, and it could be yours if you enter our competition. Our broadcast is sponsored by Turton Tower Woodland Cafe, and we're live from our historic radio ship Ross Revenge this Saturday morning, straight after Carnaby Street, on 1368 AM, on DAB and online. It's Radio Caroline North.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
It's 29 minutes after 12. I listened to Mr. Brown on Friday, says Paul in Castleton, and I thought, what a breath of fresh air. He actually restored my faith in politicians. Did you hear Tony Brown on Friday? Thanks also to Steve. Yes, Steve, I understand what you're talking about. If you want to put your point of view, Steve, by all means, give us a call. The phone line is open whenever you want. Steve on 806, by all means, do get in touch and have your say. What the Chamber of Commerce is overlooking, says Malcolm, is the huge cost of maintenance for wind turbines, plus the vast amounts of oil needed. The price of electricity cannot possibly come down. This is very tunnel visioned. Is this on purpose? Says Malcolm. Thanks to Wolfie as well. Why does the government allow Manx Utilities to charge us 30p but only offer us 9p if we invest in solar and generate more than we use? Is this encouraging citizens to do the right thing? Good point. It's 30p if they sell it to us, and it's 9p if we sell it to them. That's it. You buy it from Manx Utilities, it's the best part of 30p. You sell it to Manx Utilities after investing in everything, and you get 9p. So their electricity is worth 30p when they sell it to us, the electricity you make is only worth 9p to them. Right, let's get to the lines, and Alan's with us. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Andy.
What's on your mind?
I'd just like to say a huge thank you for everyone that put the bands on, Laxey, the commissioners and everyone who helped, and a massive thank you for the commissioners and all the sponsors who did the fire festival at Peel. It was absolutely brilliant.
Were you there? How did it go?
I went to both of them. It was absolutely brilliant.
Good. And I heard as well, I mean, how many brass bands were there at Laxey?
Six.
And I don't think they hadn't actually rehearsed together, had they? I mean, they just all turned up.
Well, they did very well at the end if they hadn't rehearsed. I didn't know they hadn't rehearsed, but if they hadn't, they did very, very well.
Well, I didn't go myself, but I know somebody who did and also know somebody who took part. And it was, I mean, as you say, they described it as spectacular and not something you'd see in many other places.
I don't think you would.
Good. All right. Well, we're happy to do that. Thanks for calling today.
Okay. Thanks, Andy.
Good to hear from you. 28 minutes before we actually, it was Eve Alden at the weekend after the hiccup of last year. Eve Alden took place, the Fire Festival. And if you're in Peel, I hope you enjoyed it by all accounts. It was a big success. Robert's on now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Andy. Sorry, I just put my glasses on. I've been out to Mount Havelock and spoke to a lady called Mrs. White, and she's such a lovely lady. I'd just like to thank her so much for donating the she gave to me, which is very kind of her. So that's lovely that she's done that much.
We'll do
and,
that.
And of course, you wouldn't be able to get any of this stuff on Facebook Marketplace, would you, if you went on it? So
there you are.
It helps. It just helps. And it wasn't a black one either, so it was good.
All right. Thanks for calling today. All right.
I'm quite happy with that. All right. No worries.
Take care now. Okay. I hope you had the omelette. Anyway, 27 minutes before one. Can somebody tell me what's happening with the scaffolding at the bottom of Summer Hill for two reasons? First of all, it looks horrible. It's an eyesore coming up to TT. Secondly, it's sticking out in the carriageway. This could cause an accident when the roads are busy. Thank you, 470. Regarding increasing footfall in Douglas High Street, in Strand Street, Castle Street, Duke Street and what have you, I live in Birmingham. We have indoor markets, a very large retail space like the Old Safeway, filled with lots of individual stalls and areas like the small businesses can rent out. I can't remember there being one like that in Douglas, but something like that would help small independent businesses, especially the ones that may not be able to afford a traditional shop front, says Liam. Thank you, Liam. Good to hear from you. The only thing that was close to that was, of course, the old Market Hall, which is now Noah on North Quay. That used to be filled with small businesses once upon a time. Now, of course, that's gone. So the opportunity for an indoor market, well, there's a thought. And certainly the government's announced that the old Safeways, or as we used to know it, Lipton's, is up for rental. Is it $300,000 a year? Split that up into a few small businesses. Maybe that will be something. We'll wait for somebody to come up with an idea. There's only one decision to make regarding the Craigneish bus route, and that is to reinstate it, says Tony on 538. Full stop, reinstate it. It will be a simple phone call in any other business. Says Tony. It's complicated though, isn't it, Tony? Whenever government get involved, everything's complicated. And it seems, you may have heard Jane Glover, the commissioner, talking about the fact that it looks like it's going to be reinstated. But it's taken all this to reinstate it. Somebody somewhere thought it was a good idea just to get rid of it. And also, says Liam, the UK's energy market set by international oil and gas prices, even if it only produces, says, 1% of electricity, given that our renewable output is increasing, there are calls for this to change. Zonal pricing is being considered, but perhaps the Isle of Man is too small for that. And Gaz says, and these are Gaz's words, by the way, what he calls climate zealots will deliver us net zero. Unfortunately, it'll be net zero in our pocket, pithy. Thank you, Gaz. How to improve Douglas Town Centre, says 376. I won't say what is said, but it's not very complimentary. And we've got John with us now. Hi, John.
Hi, Andy. Two things, actually. The first thing, what somebody just said about Tony Brown.
Yeah.
It was nice to hear a politician speaking intelligently, let's put it that way. I mean, you know, if we had him back and a few more like him, I don't think we'd be in the mess we're in now. Second thing, I came from Ramsey to Onchan last Friday night. Now, normally I'd come over the mountain, but the mountain was closed, for they were resurfacing. First thing I noticed, marvellous cat's eyes all the way, obviously brand new. I mean, it was like Blackpool Illuminations all the way. But they haven't done anything about the road surface. Now, wouldn't you have thought they'd have done the road surface and then put the cat's eyes down? Because if they ever do get round to doing that road, which is horrendous, they'll have to dig them all up again. Just seems a really a case of putting the cart before the horse.
Right. Just specifically, whereabouts did you say?
All the way from Ramsey to Laxey, and I think all the way to Onchan, actually, if I remember right. But certainly all the way from Ramsey to Laxey, there's new cat's eyes. They were so bright. They must be brand new all the way. You know, I hadn't travelled that road for a while.
Yeah.
But the road surface is horrendous in places.
Interesting. I was driving down from Douglas to the airport yesterday, and they've resurfaced an awful lot of it. It was almost like roads used to be on the Isle of Man, like a billiard table. But obviously there are some places where it's not, and obviously that coast road is looking a bit tired in places.
Just
let me go back to what you were saying about Tony Brown. When you say Tony, did you say he inspired confidence or was talking common sense? Which was it?
He was more, yes. He, in that hour, there was more sense than I've heard for a long time.
In what way?
Well, his whole attitude, you know. I mean, what he basically said was, if you are going to go into government MHKs, you should do time in a local respect, you know, a local council first.
Yeah.
And a lot of them haven't. You know, they've just gone straight in. Got voted in as MHKs with no experience, and it's what he said. You gain experience from local authorities.
So, I mean, it's not their fault. I mean, so we voted them in. So whose fault is it?
Ours. Ours. You know, you get what you pay for, they always say, you know, yeah. But... now, some of them, when they come on, it's unbelievable, some of the... I mean, the roads, for instance, I mean, in Onchan, they're doing little cul-de-sacs, which, let's face it, doesn't get any traffic apart from the residents, and it's got a beautiful tarmac surface. And yet, the main road going into Douglas Woodburn Road and all is shocking. You know, it's unbelievable, you know.
Okay.
I mean, the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, as you know, I was a driving examiner. How can you conduct a driving test when the speed limit is 20 mile an hour all over?
So what's the problem, then, if that's the case?
Well, it shouldn't be a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit. You've got to, I mean, you know, I mean, how can you judge a driver, a learner driver, when they don't go over 20 mile an hour? I mean, I would like I'd like the test to have been, instead of 3/4 of an hour, more like 1.5 hours, and you could have gone out, you know, to Laxey and back or something, you know, and seen what they did on the open road, because that's where they're going to have the accidents.
Yeah, that's a very important point, and nobody's mentioned that, and I'm glad you raised that. So, you can't really tell if somebody's driving up to 20 miles an hour. Good point.
No. They never get out of second gear.
Okay. All right, John, we appreciate that.
Bye now.
Thanks for calling today. It's 19 minutes before one. Regarding road safety, says Liz on 009, you can't hear electric cars, especially around corners. So it wouldn't make much difference if you got headphones on anyway, because you can't hear the darn things. I've just Jane dropped a note in just to say I've just driven and walked along the prom this morning. I was just wondering if the people who designed and agreed the prom would ever reflect and say, do you know what, we made a right mess of this. We'd have been better just digging it up and putting down some new tarmac. The seawall is so high, smaller people and children can't see over it. People sitting on the benches on the prom just look at concrete. The road surface is marked. It's tatty already. What remains of the paved crossings are breaking up or are sinking. The lighting is style over substance. The silly parking bays near the shops and the narrow road at that end makes manoeuvring harder than it should be. And if the trams ever do go beyond the reverse parked cars, what a hazard that's going to be. Ironically, the best part of the prom is the much maligned roundels. The prom, says Jane, is a living metaphor for the state of recent and current governments and the decline of the Isle of Man. I'm sad. I'm ashamed. So much money and so little benefit. Thank you, Jane. Well, I'll agree with you regarding the roundels. I mean, they have been a success. And they're certainly a talking point. And they never said at the beginning, if, do you think if the people in the DOI had actually said at the beginning, we're going to actually enforce a traffic calming measure on Douglas Prom? They never said that. They did say they were taking away lots of parking, and lo and behold, what are they going to build near Circus Beach? A multi-storey car park. So they took away, was it 60 car parking spaces off Douglas Prom? They've complicated some of these. I can't believe it's not a zebra crossing and real zebra crossings. Some have got Belisha beacons, some haven't. The others, well, it's like the Okeechobee. They didn't tell us. And as for the promenade, does anybody think that the promenade now is in a better condition than it used to be in? Above ground. The one thing that we do say is that below ground, everything is sorted out. Because when DOI did do it, there were pipes coming from places they didn't know, and some pipes going to other places they didn't know. So all that sorted out. So the infrastructure under the prom now is in much better condition. The only problem is we can't see it. And here's Adam with us. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Randy. How are you today?
Very good, thanks.
That's good. I've just walked along the promenade, Andy, and I've got a few points to make. First of all, that seawall, Andy, which you've been moaning about, has not got... why haven't they pebble dashed it the same as the existing wall on the promenade, where which is like it's got the same patterns on as the wall on the promenade, which is all right, but it hasn't got a pebble dash finished, and why not is what I'd like to know. Why didn't they finish it off the same way as the existing wall? And also, the Sunken Gardens, Andy, they obviously not done yet because they're not done until after CT to save any vandalism and that being happening to them. So, but why are they mucking around with them? You know, they're the jewel of the promenade, aren't they? The best bit of the promenade is those Sunken Gardens in flower in the summertime. And I just think it's awful the way they're destroying them. And that park, that lovely kiddies park, which used to be there, which was always busy. I thought they were replacing that with some sort of wooden pirate ship thing for children to play on. Why hasn't that been replaced yet? You know, it's not looking good down there, is it? And I'll tell you something else. In the Villa Gardens, the planting has been done, and it's where they used to have lovely flower beds, they're putting all shrubs and things in the flower beds, obviously to save money. And they put all hebes and sort of big shrubs at the front, so you can see they're going to grow up and actually smother the smaller perennials and plants behind them. So why, they've obviously not had a planting plan done to work to. So, you know, why are things not done properly? They spent so much money doing the Villa Marina, and for it to have that horrible... That beautiful fountain wrecked and turned into that horrible flower bed at the front by the colonnade, which is just full of great big ugly shrubs, not even pruned, you know, really hideous. And then for for the gardens to be allowed to deteriorate in the way they have done, I think it's just awful. You know, they did it too posh in the first place, and then they don't look after it, and it's just entirely the wrong way to go about running it.
And the thing is that this is supposed, you know, bearing in mind, the Villa Marina gardens are supposed to look attractive. That's what gardens are for. They're supposed to be pretty, prim and proper, and attractive. And not only that's very good for the bees. Flowers are good for the bees. Shrubs aren't as good.
No, shrubs are not as good, and obviously perennials and things very good for bees, as long as they're not double blooms. But it's a shame what they've done to it, because as you say, they're supposed to look good and beautiful, and I don't think it works. Doesn't have work having the food and drinks festival in there and having TT's Butties Village in there. You know, there's a whole promenade with a great big wide walkway to have those sorts of things on. Why do they have to have them in the Villa Gardens? Why can they not just make the Villa Gardens beautiful? You know, they were beautiful back in 20 years ago. They were lovely, the Villa Gardens, but these days they've deteriorated a lot. But
and
tell
we
you,
had, I mean, the guys involved in the gardens, in the squares and everything, the guys on the ground with the spades and the plants are second to none. They're just being told what to do.
Yeah. Well, you say that, Andy. I've just walked along the promenade this morning with my cousin, who's transgender. And there was one of the corporation workers sat on the bench there, mouthing off how much he hates us. You know, some guy from Liverpool mouthing off how much he hates us, making it well heard that we could hear him saying, you know, all nasty things about us, just thinking we were a couple, you know, just because my cousin's transgender woman. So I don't have much to say about the corporation workers at the moment. But what I was ringing up, one of the other things I was ringing up for, I was going to say about Chester Street car park. They were asking online for ideas as to how they could get footfall, raise footfall on Strand Street. And I was thinking, you know, the basement of Chester Street car park, when it had that ShopRite in it and Subway, and when there was a cash point on the ground floor of Chester Street car park on Chester Street,
yeah,
it was a real little hub, and people used to walk through, you know, through Strand Street from Marksey's to, and before it was ShopRite, was Sainsbury's, to Chester Street car park. People were able to get cash out there, which they could spend at that end of the street, you know, at the Villa end of the street, and they could use ShopRite, do the shopping, get any items they want in Marksey's, walk along, and that way you're getting people flowing through Strand Street. But they said, the ShopRite said they were moving out of Chester Street car park because the government wasn't spending any money on Chester Street car park and it all needed revamping. So why do they not spend some money on Chester Street car park, get it revamped and see if they can get someone like Robinson's in there, get a cash point put back, have a some sort of cafe, Subway or something similar, which is, Subway's not quite as popular as it used to be, but something similar to that, and get the hub, which used to exist at the bottom of Well Road Hill, because I used to live at the top of Well Road Hill and I used to walk through it all the time, and it was always so busy with people, it was a real hub, and get that back and then get the footfall flowing through Strand Street again.
Okay, appreciate it, Adam, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Andy.
All the best. Improve the footfall in Strand Street by lowering VAT on bars and restaurants. Speculate to accumulate, says Paul. We could have our version of Bold Street in Liverpool here. A note in that also says a few of the sunken gardens are being enhanced. All details of the scheme are in the public domain. There was a public consultation. I would say it's all been done properly, says James on 623. Thank you, James. Fred says, I'm sorry to say this, Douglas is a dump, especially the prom area. It looks horrendous. It needs bulldozing and starting again. Oh dear. Having said that, the whole island looks unattractive. If I came here on holiday, I wouldn't want to return here. I'm fed up, says Fred. Fed up, Fred. Well, you're probably looking at it too closely. It's funny, when you go away and you come back to the island and you realise, A, how green it is, and B, how tidy it is. Certainly, out of towns, it's very, very tidy, and there's not much litter. Oh, and a note in from 700. I agree with Adam. It looks like the Archibald Knox garden has gone and is being grassed over. Oh, here's Juan now. Hi, Juan.
Hey, Andy. Well, I was expecting to see you with your Viking outfit on Sunday going along Peel Promenade. I was waiting for you.
Oh, you didn't see me then, did you? You see, I was there.
I didn't spot you. You were there. Didn't spot you. Yeah, just a quick one. I know we haven't got a lot of time, but the O'Boldon, what a great event. Absolutely brilliant for Peel. I think John Shakespeare and his team done well, and the volunteers were absolutely fantastic. The show wouldn't have worked without the volunteers. Amy and the team did well with the security. I think it was a really good event. Congratulations to John for getting that on. I think last year he fell foul with the sponsor because they wanted to put a pop-up bar there, and the commissioners wouldn't allow it. And I think it was short-sighted of the local business people to put an objection in, because, you know, everything was busy down here till like 10, 11 o'clock on Sunday night. So it was a fantastic event. And let's hope there's many more. Very, very Manx, very Viking, very patriotic. It was good. And the weather made it as well. And I think maybe, you know, talking about Douglas, we need more pop-up events in Douglas, because that's what's going to bring trade into town. I mean, the Pandora's box is open with retail. Everyone can sit at midnight at home and order their stuff from Amazon. So them days of traditional shopping are gone out the window. So I think we need extra pop-up events in and around the town to try and draw some people back into town and get the footfall back to some kind of status around there, you know.
Do you know if they've already announced, is there going to be an E'Boldon next year? Is there going to be a fire festival next year?
I heard John saying that, yeah. You know, hopefully we'll get a sponsor for it. It's a great event. I mean, I'm sure you'll get some help from the government attractions and events programme. I would think if that was advertised, a lot of people from Europe and Norway and Scandinavia would come over and join in with it. You know, yeah. People who do them events over there.
And the fact is, Juan, our credentials, our Viking credentials are 100%. It's got immense integrity, you know. We were, you know, the Vikings came here, they had a presence here. Tynwald, obviously, Thingvollir, it's got Viking heritage. And I would venture to suggest not many people know about the Isle of Man's Viking heritage.
They don't, Andy. And I mean, you know, I travel a lot and I talk to people, as I was saying to Sony Brown on Friday. You know, I talk to people and I always pick the Isle of Man up with its history and tell people as much as possible about the history. And a lot of people don't. They don't acknowledge that. They know it for road racing and they know it for tax, and that's all they know it for. So we've got something special here that could be worked on and you know, get them people over. But again, it's that cost of getting over here, making it prohibitive for people to come. But eventually, events like John put on there is great. I hope it goes on next year. And more events around the island would be great. I mean, Peel Castle was the backdrop for it, and the fireworks and everything on Sunday night was great, and the weather made it perfect event. I'm sure, and listening to Tony Brown on Friday saying that there wasn't much interest from government in backing our heritage and history is quite concerning, because similar to what Adam was saying there, once it's gone, it's gone. You lose this stuff, you don't get it back. You pull it down, you don't get it back. You see that with the horse trams now, the fights to try and get it back or establish where it was. You know, and in a reasonable financial manner, because people are going to say, well, we're in hard times and we can't afford it. But, you know, there's a mountain of volunteers out there who, you know, you go to Castle Rushen and Peel Castle, it wouldn't work without these people. I mean, they're great when you go in there, the knowledge that they've got. And if it wasn't for the volunteers, a lot of this stuff wouldn't work. You know, the Gaiety Theatre and all this stuff. So, you know, long may it rain.
Okay.
Let's hope that the government, you know, step forward and put some money into it.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Juan.
Take care, Andy.
It's 5-1 on Manx Radio. And remember, if you want to get in touch, all you need to do is text 166177, email studio@manxradio.com. You can call 66 13 68. I agree with the previous listener. Tony Brown really does offer a refreshing voice. I've read some of his comments on social media, and honestly, he could help us all by putting himself up for election to Keys again. Very impressed with him, and more power to his elbow. That's another Juan on 715. Did you hear Tony Brown on Friday talking? And he was on because he put himself forward for the commissioners and topped the poll in Castletown. Topped the poll. and he is back in Commissioners, where he started in 1976. Can you imagine that, 49 years ago, and then back in the Commissioners after being, well, Chief Minister and Minister three, four times in Keys? 18,000 on a solar system, that which works extremely well a year, but 9p buyback MEA is not very encouraging. That's not a government incentive, says 375 on the WhatsApp. To get people back in shopping in Douglas, banish the internet, says Malcolm. Well, you've got no hope, Malcolm. That's my only rejoinder to that, because everybody, I mean, everybody who's on the internet shops on the internet, let's face it. Was there any purpose in stopping the pay for postmen and women being paid during the last storm? These people work long, hard hours, especially over Christmas. Mr. Peasers has no idea how much postal workers commit to the job in unsocial hours, especially bank holidays. The managers and people working from home were paid, but the people working on the front line weren't. Disgusting. Angry John. Oh, don't be angry, John. If building a wind farm in Irish Dane is such a good idea, Manx Utilities should raise the cost of building it through private funding, not taxpayers' money. If there's any money in it, banks will be falling over themselves to lend money, says WhatsApper 648. And a mention, in this is Lenny, who dropped me a note just to say, is it true? I've heard a Manx rumour that the actor Victor Spinetti once lived in Port St Mary. Is it true? The Welsh actor Victor Spinetti, who was in two Beatles films, did he ever live in Port St Mary? Can anybody help? Right, back tomorrow, we're looking at energy efficiency.
W-I-N-T